podcast from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Office of National Mission. This is God's Mission Here.
Welcome to the God's Mission Here podcast. I'm Andy Becker, the Manager of Family Discipleship for the Office of National Mission. This is the season we're talking about family ministries. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm here with my co-host, Steph Neugebauer. Our guest today is Reverend Brandon Metcalf. Brandon, welcome. Would you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, my name is Brandon Metcalf. I'm a pastor at Zion Lutheran Church in Bethalto, Illinois. Previously, I served as a DCE in the Missouri District. My wife and I have two kiddos, and depending on timing of the recording, three kiddos at home that we're expecting in July of this year. Grew up in the St. Louis area, so I have kind of connections around the synod there, and yeah, just glad to be here.
It's so good to have you on, Brandon. First of all, I just want to know, what got you interested in family discipleship, family ministry?
Growing up in a Christian household, there's things that you take for granted that then when you, for me at least, when I became a church worker, when I became a DCE, began to realize how important some of those things that you don't even really know, regular attendance at worship and Bible study being a priority, and you know, just having faith conversations throughout and recognizing a lot of families don't have that. In fact, most don't have that. It's not that they don't want to have that. It's just hasn't been a part of their kind of habit growing up. And my first couple of months as a DCE intern at Lake of the Ozarks, that part of the program for the internship was you're supposed to do home visits. And so I did 18 home visits in like a 3-week stretch. And there was something about getting in the homes of those youth. Primarily, I was doing it to relaunch our youth group. But what I found out was in getting to know the parents and kind of having those conversations, realized if I can get the parents on board, the youth are likely going to follow. And I had a youth group of about a third to half of our students weren't connected to the church at all. It was just through the youth group. And so seeing those doors that were being opened by, one, if I can get the parents connected, that really makes a big difference. But the other is, if getting the youth connected, they actually ended up being some of the people that were connecting with the families. And so kind of being in a unique setting at the time really opened my eyes to the importance of the partnership between home and church.
So this was even before you had kids in your home. This was as you were a new DCE, you were realizing this.
Yeah.
Okay, fascinating.
Yeah, I remember doing some of those home visits too, and that was back in the days before a GPS on my phone. I don't know about yours, but I got lost several times on that, Brandon, when doing those. But yes, found that so valuable of getting to know the parents and getting them plugged into the ministry and the value of their faith life for their child too. That's huge.
As long as the printed MapQuest could get you there.
Right.
My issue is not getting there. It's how do I reverse the directions in my head?
I remember those.
I think we just all dated ourselves there a little bit, but that's all right. So Brandon, when thinking about family discipleship, I know that you guys have a Lutheran school there at Zion. What are some of the challenges that you have in family ministry with the Lutheran school, but what are also some opportunities that are there as well?
Yeah, so the opportunity, and this is what any ministry that has a school has to continually remember, on those long days or just when it seems like there's too many things going on, you're being pulled in all these directions, what I remind myself is part of the reason I'm being pulled in all these directions is because we have access to between 50 and 150 families that are not connected to our church. And so you recognize that, you see that as the blessing that it is, you take a breath, and then you kind of move forward with the next thing. It's a great opportunity. I mean, how many churches, if you said, hey, let's throw out a dollar amount, throw out a time amount, throw out an energy amount, said, would it be worth this amount of money, this amount of time, this amount of thing for you to have a program that would reach hundreds of kids and families? I think almost any congregation would jump on it. But for those that already have it, I think sometimes we lose sight of that in the busyness of running around, you know, school schedule, church schedule, visits and programs, all of those kind of things. The opportunity always has to be kind of kept in front of us.
Yeah, those families that are just, they're right inside of our building, you know, on a, you know,
5 times a week, you know, throughout the school year. And they're looking, I think, and asking for help, especially with the education of their child, but with other things, I think, in their families too. So, I mean, a tremendous opportunity that we already have names and faces of people that need to know about Jesus.
In your context, how many of these families then, you said 50 to 150 different kids on average that are not associated with your church, but yet sent kids to your school. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then out of those numbers, what percentage would you say have no association with a church at all?
So we have, our preschool has about 150, 160 students. And then our elementary school K-8 has 180 to 190 this upcoming year. And what we're seeing, a greater percentage of our preschool families do not have a church home. Most of those that historically that commit kind of to the elementary school are connected to a church somewhere. But even that has changed these last couple of years. Our kindergarten has really grown. And so we've seen some of those preschool families that they got connected because they love the community here. And some of them are now beginning to wonder, okay, how can I become more involved in the community? And that actually leads them into the church. The preschool is definitely where we see the most people that are inactive or disconnected from the church. But keep in mind, I mean, you think 5 years ago when these kids were born, circumstances were a lot different, a lot of isolation, and many of these families, they got disconnected and never really got reconnected. And now that their kids are at a Lutheran school, I think it's a great opportunity for them to go, well, we've been kind of disconnected for a couple of years. Our child's learning about this at school. And so many of them are at least a little bit more open to considering getting more connected.
So do you think at baseline it's the community they crave, or do you think it's the gospel they crave? Like, what is your entry point for these families?
Yeah, so for a lot of families, the entry point is the connection, the community. Oftentimes, when we have those opportunities to invite those families to church, for example, their preschoolers are singing, or we're giving Bibles, you know, to these students, or there's something like that that's connecting them. What happens is that they come, and we try to incorporate a lot of that into worship itself to get people in the doors, to hopefully kind of reduce that barrier of, then if they want to come another Sunday, it's not their first time. They want to come for Christmas. They've been in the building before because they watched a kids program there, or they had Donuts for Dads, had a little opening in the sanctuary, that they've been in the building before. And hopefully when they're in there, what they're hearing from the church, again, our Lutheran understanding of law and gospel, a gospel dominant service and sermon, might be something perhaps even brand new or at least refreshing for them, that then becomes the thing that's going to keep them connected.
You've been talking about connections, Brandon, and how important that is for those school families and even some of those things that you've done to foster that. Anything else that you guys have been working on to try to build those connections, or anything you're doing for the school families in general to work towards family discipleship?
Yeah. So the main thing we kind of pilot tested last year, we called it our Zion Bridge Families program. And so basically the theory behind it is in a school classroom, at least elementary kind of school age, you have normally a parent or a couple of parents that are designated kind of the room mom or the room dad, and they kind of coordinate parties or teacher gifts, or they're kind of the boots on the ground.
I was always thankful I didn't have to be the room dad, by the way, because the crafts would have been not very good.
So, exactly.
Yeah.
And so kind of taking that same idea, why don't we have that on the church end? Why don't we have an active family that can kind of be a connecting point? They can, and depending on their gifts, some are a little more outgoing. Some, as the kids get older, they already have those relationships because their kids have been in school together for years. And so to kind of capitalize that and go, rather than the staff being the ones, hey, here's this event coming up, how about we raise up some individuals within the school? So we did this for every grade every classroom that we could in our school. A couple of our preschool classes do not have a member in it because we have so many preschoolers kind of from our community. But we also did it in our public school. We couldn't do every classroom, but we did at least every building that we had someone represented at, to be able to kind of keep our ear towards what are some needs in your area that we can meet and kind of build some partnerships there as well. But really the what we found in doing even just the training with these bridge families, about 30 families were part of it. Some of them, because they went to different services or had different age kids or different schools, they didn't necessarily know each other. And so in just gathering those people together, you begin to build this community so that on a Sunday morning when you're there, it's not just, well, me and my family come and me and my family leave. Now I'm seeing more of these families. They're talking after church over donuts. They're getting connected at other events. People that didn't know each other a year ago are now inviting each other to their kids' birthday parties. We're seeing, and the main thing we're seeing is when these families are connected to one another, we see them more often in worship.
Brandon, whether you're working with school families or church families, what are some tangible things you've done to help these families, especially those who are open to learning new ways to bring the gospel into their mm-hmm. home life? What are some ways that you helped these families along with family discipleship?
So the theory that I kind of adopted and has been reinforced in the last couple of years of really diving into family ministry, family discipleship, is you first start with what are you currently doing? And then how can we either tweak that? How can we intentionally take something that's already going on and help bring it into the home, or take something in the home and bring it into the church? So a couple examples for Advent and Lent, we restarted doing meals. We have a different, in Lent we do, and this is something that they did at my previous church, we have a different group from the congregation host that meal. And so they pick the theme and the decorations and all that. And so we have a fellowship meal. It forces that group to get together, work together, a great opportunity for them to serve alongside one another. And so that kind of becomes one connecting point. Alongside of that, we started doing an Advent and a Lent devotional book that is written by our members. So we have some youth write devotions. We have adults write devotions. We have some staff write devotions. And then we record each of those on a podcast also and have maybe a 3-minute, 4-minute discussion on it. So that there's these, you can either read the devotion, you know, with your family at home and have a discussion about it. You can listen to the podcast while you're driving. Even for many of our people, the episodes shorten us their commute to and from church, to and from school, to and from the doctor's office. They can listen to those. And so you're kind of connecting in, tapping into what is it they're already doing. You know, we're gathering together, you know, for fellowship. We're in the car, so we're going to have this faith conversation. What we did in our Bible class then, for Lent, one of our the kind of family focused class that I teach, we went through ourselves the Lenten devotional, talked about two each week, and tried to model those kind of conversations. The other thing is thinking about milestones and how you can tap into those. So we normally gave our second graders Bibles. Last year we started to do storybook Bibles for our preschoolers. So the new thing we did this year was, alongside the giving of the Bibles in between services and the Sunday school hour, we had a little kind of workshop basically to get to know your new storybook Bible. So we had them actually open it, read it. We talked about prayers you can say. Essentially, it was a family devotion workshop. We just didn't title it that so that people would feel less intimidated by it. And so taking something we already did and going, how can we help? If we're going to give them a resource, how can we help model it? So if we're doing devotions, how do we resource and model that? If we're giving Bibles, how do we resource and model that? If we're wanting people to pray at home, how are we incorporating that into the life of the congregation?
Why is it so important to model and not just give a resource? Why do you want to model what you're doing? Why do you talk about that?
I mean, the short answer is people won't use it if you don't model it. It'll, with good intentions, they'll go, oh, this is a great idea. It'll get set to the side. But if they've had a chance to see it done, to do it themselves, that raises the confidence level to then, I'm actually gonna give this a shot. And if you have a community of people that are all kind of giving it a shot together, that they're much more likely for them to actually continue with it. And different families will be in different seasons of life. Some faith practices will really thrive, and others, maybe a different season, they'll be more into a certain structure or a certain format. But being able to kind of provide that, speak into that, not to say, here's the only way you can do this, but to kind of cast the vision of faith and home partnership with faith at church partnership. And then to be able to kind of resource and find ways that this is actually attainable, something that normal people do, not just like the elite class of the church. And I think a lot of families maybe wonder about it. They go, oh, well, I would like to do that, but we're not super Christians at all, you know, or I didn't grow up with that, so I'm not comfortable with that. The more you model stuff, the more comfortable people get and see this actually could work for us.
I remember when our oldest, who's 16 now, when he was born and we started doing kind of a prayer and blessing with him at night. I mean, he was an infant in the crib, and we started doing some of those things. It felt weird to me. And I'm a pastor, church worker, grew up in that, you know, had that modeled for me, but me leading that with my son, that felt different. And so to have that, you know, that training where you can, and modeling where you can kind of make that normal for people and help them say, hey, this is okay. You can do this. I really like that. So you're talking a little bit, Brandon, about different ages and stages. Sometimes people think family ministry and they think, well, that's just for parents that have kids. And as we look at that, and I like the family discipleship, as we look at that, we really want this to be for everybody, no matter what your family or your household looks like. And so a piece of family discipleship is really thinking about men, fathers. So why is men's ministry important when we talk about family ministry?
You can go through pretty much any research on faith formation, longevity, which relationships have the most impact. And a common thread through all of it is the faith life habits and attitudes of the father are one of the most important things for the faith of the child and really the spiritual health of the household. That's not to say there aren't amazing exceptions to that rule all over the place. But if we're looking at, again, kind of strategically going, if we can reach this person, that's going to impact this whole other group of people. It's kind of like how in, you know, when people are trying to influence a company or a government or something, and they go, well, if I can get this person to vote this way, they're going to bring five other votes with them. That's kind of what we see almost within the home is if we can get buy-in from the father, oftentimes that ends up really impacting the rest of the family. And obviously we have some biblical and confessional kind of mandates for that. Obviously it's God's world. He designed it. We see it when we see that lining up with the kind of research and the way we see things actually work. We go, oh, it's as if God designed things to work a certain way. And this is a good thing. And the problem is that our messaging towards men oftentimes isn't the kind of encouraging opportunity base. A lot of men, I think, feel beat down by the world and perhaps even by the church.
Well, if that's the case, Brandon, then what are some things that our men, even our younger boys, need to hear from the church today?
So we have a tremendous resource in, again, the Lutheran understanding of one on vocation, but two on the distinction between law and gospel. I think in my own experience, we started a young men's Bible study about a year ago. I had a number of guys in their 20s that they were connected to church, somewhat active or sometimes really active in worship, and kind of looked at them and I go, if we don't do something to connect with these guys, to build relationships, to kind of get them incorporated in this crucial stage before many of them are married, before they have kids, that kind of thing, I think that there's the potential of losing it. So we started that group, started a Bible study. And as I was kind of scanning just the broader, you know, amount of resources on there, a lot of books that I previously even used or resources I thought about, a lot of men's ministry just in general, particularly from those outside of our Lutheran circles, it's pretty much all law. It's you do this, you need to step up, you aren't doing enough, here's all the things, the problems that you're facing. And a lot of men, you know, even kind of boys, teenagers, all that, they already feel the weight of the law. They already feel like they're not doing enough. They feel like not just they aren't doing enough, that they aren't enough. And so we have these men that are defeated almost. And the message of the church, again, that the law is not people that are already broken. Let's hit them over the hammer. The message is for those who are broken in their sin, we bring the gospel. And so with men's ministry and any type of ministry in general, but men's ministry in particular, we have this ability to tell a man, regardless of what you produce or what you do or how together your life or your home is, that you matter. Oftentimes that message has been reserved for kids or for like a chapel message or for a women's group. I mean, think of the average congregation Mother's Day service. Way to go, moms. You're doing awesome. Father's Day service. All right, dads, you got to step it up. You know, you got to do better. And I think we're mixing the message. A lot of men need to hear first. They need to hear that they're forgiven, that they're called, they're loved apart from anything that they do. And then we can build on that foundation by modeling and showing what does it look like to lead in a godly way. But that's step two, I think. We skip over the crucial step one of speaking that gospel promise.
So if you could just go in a little more general here, if you could encourage churches to do one thing to help families, what would it be?
On the congregational side, I think being able to help your families, it's kind of two sides of the same coin. Help them to prioritize and help them to be able to rest. And some of this connects with all the great stuff we've been putting out about worker health. That applies obviously to church workers. It also applies to our families. I think our families are looking and are kind of desperate for, I want to do family discipleship. I want to do all these kind of things, but I don't have any margin or any capacity to be able to do that. And so if we jump straight to, here's this resource, here's this thing, here's this program, here's all that, that all might be phenomenal material, but they're not ready for it yet. They don't have the ability or that kind of energy to be able to do it. And so if there's one thing we can start with, is helping our families prioritize what is actually important. Because normally, I think in our current culture, both in the church and outside of the church, the things that are important are dictated on what's the consequence if I don't do this. Well, if we don't go to this tournament, there's consequences on the team. If I don't get this assignment done, or if I'm not a part of this, you know, these 16 clubs, my resume is going to be not as good, and therefore there's a consequence when it has to do with college admissions or scholarship. And on the church end, what's the consequence? Well, they're not going to kick me out, hopefully. And so that ends up kind of falling, you know, on the wayside. And so helping our families to see its priority is not just based on what the immediate cost is, but what's the vision of what's most important? Where are you going? As to be able to help people to say yes to the things that are really most important to them. Again, that this all goes back to the idea really of Sabbath rest, for families to prioritize not just worship, like, but really this idea of Sabbath rest creates then the margin and the space for all these other things that we would like to be a part of it. But if they don't have that kind of foundation, that priority, a lot of the rest of it, they're going to be good programs, good materials, good ideas, but we'll struggle to incorporate them.
Brandon, you mentioned margin and the feeling of lack of any kind of margin in busy daily family life. I have three young kids and I already feel that way. Mm-hmm. We're not even in the thick of it yet with sports or extracurriculars. So I can absolutely sympathize with that feeling that most families have. But just to keep it simple, then if you could tell, you know, one thing, one way to encourage these families who already feel like they're pushed to their limits, what would you say to encourage them in their family discipleship at home so that they don't feel bogged down, but rather they hear the gospel message even as you're trying to encourage them to lead their families in the faith?
So this might seem a little counterintuitive since we're focusing on family discipleship at home, but the thing I would recommend is to prioritize worshiping as a family and going to Bible class / Sunday school. That if there's only one thing you're going to do, it's be connected to word, sacrament, and the life of the church in that. Oftentimes Sundays, different congregations might have different ideas, but that kind of as a priority. And so we're in worship, and I would add to it Bible class or Sunday school, because that's it's a formational, it's a relational. There's a depth to belonging in a congregation that comes through educational programming that it enhances everything else about the connection of that family. So with that as the priority, if the family goes, regardless of what else is going on, we are committed to this. Then the at-home piece simply becomes, because we had that shared experience in worship, we heard the same songs, or we sang the same songs, we heard the same sermon, we prayed for that same person, and then maybe we had different lessons or stuff in Bible class, Sunday school, that kind of things. That then gives us a wealth of scriptural material and just life that throughout the rest of that week, things are going to come up that remind you of something in the sermon or a song that you sang or something like that. And then that becomes part of this devotional life throughout the week with the family. If we're not connected in worship, if we didn't have that shared experience, we then don't have that connect going forward then for the rest of the week. So if there's one thing that you're going to do, it's commit to worship and Bible class as a family. This is what we do. And then throughout the week for those faith conversations to just kind of naturally flow from that. The best place to start, pretty natural, pretty easy. There's a lot that you can obviously build onto that, but that's really where it all flows from, receiving God's gifts and then sharing those gifts as God opens those doors throughout the week.
Well, I guess what I'm hearing you say then is that just in that simple routine alone, you're ingraining in the culture of this family, the sense of belonging to a church community that inadvertently teaches your children, this is who you are.
Yes.
This is who you are. This is what the life of a Christian looks like. And so no matter as they age and as the family stages change, you always have that, you know, that one solid factor, which is this is who we are. This is what our family is.
Yeah. And I think that the shift for parents would be not just do this for the sake of your kids. The best witness parents can give is we're going to church because I need it. I'm opening my Bible because I need to hear God's word. And if parents can make that subtle shift of not just, well, we're going because you need to go to Sunday school, but no, we all need this, me included. Man, what a powerful witness that is to that next generation. It's not this, all right, take everything you're doing, throw it all out. No, it's to cast that vision, to share that priority of, you know, mom and dad need this. And then that then carries you as the kids leave, as there's different opportunities, even though those parents are no longer kind of lost while everything was about the kids. No, I was in church because this is what I need and this is who I am. And that will continue also and help those parents stay rooted when their life changes over the years and the seasons.
Yeah, like that, Brandon. I was thinking just that it's that modeling thing you talked about earlier, right? It's that you model it not just so somebody else catches it, but you model it because this is what you do and what you live. And so as the parents are doing this, it's automatically modeling what this life looks like of following Jesus for their children. It's great.
I think we could talk about this for quite a long time, especially with the experience that both of you have in both pastoral ministry and as as DCE. So thank you so much, Brandon, for giving of your time and sharing your wisdom. And I know that this will absolutely serve those who are listening.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. This has been God's Mission Here.
Thanks for joining us. If you liked what you heard, please leave us a review and don't forget to click the follow or subscribe button so that you don't miss out on upcoming episodes. God's Mission Here is a podcast that discusses Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation, and how He delivers those gifts where you live and serve.